Welcome in to Open Gym here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Myself, Patrick Davis, alongside Matt Gladson of Texas Longhorns on SI. And of course, you, the third member of Open Gym. Text lines open, 512-222-9328. And over there on the chat, Facebook, Twitch, X, and on YouTube. Matt, I feel like you're in a pretty happy mood today. Feels like it's a good Friday show.
That was the best sports moment of my life, Patrick, I think. That in like 2005, Vince versus USC, I think, were the two best sports moments of my life. I was ready to mail it in after the fumble return for a touchdown by Georgia. But somehow Ole Miss was able to claw their way back in. And I think it's really weird to say, and it sounds hyperbolic, but I actually think that I believe that Ole Miss is better without Lane Kiffin this right now.
I mean, I think it definitely unified the team more. Like it gave them something to go for, and especially, yeah, the defense as well. That defense is just like, dude, we never even came for you. We came for Golden. So get out of here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it does feel like they're very intent on what they're doing, and to be able to come in and everything we saw the last couple of days there in the playoffs, it's been a lot of fun. So we got a lot to get into today. We've got we got to talk about Texas, the Cheez-It Bowl, the bowl, and the portal opened as well. There's a coach who's not coming back. There's a lot happening, Matt. But did you have a good New Year's Eve? Did you have a good time ringing in the new year before you got to then watch your Rebels advance in the playoffs?
I did. We went out and we got this ticket that gave us access to like four of the bars on our street that are all owned by the same people, so we kind of moseyed back and forth between the lot of them, and it was good. I feel like that's probably going to be the last time I go out on New Year's for a good portion of my life, more than likely. But that's okay. And then I didn't really get much sleep when I got home because I was too excited about this game and about the upcoming games. I ended up staying up till like 5 a.m. And then I fell asleep for like an hour and woke up and it's like, all right, I'm just going to power through it. I'm going to watch the Tech Oregon game. And I slept through that entire football game. But I was able to rally just in time for Ole Miss and Georgia. And it was worth it for sure.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, New Year's Eve, I went over to a friend's house, so I didn't go out either. I know it's a lot, so you just go there. And there's fireworks everywhere, too, so you just go out in the yard and watch the fireworks at midnight. We were in South Austin. There was tons and tons. Yeah. You don't have to spend any money, do anything. And so we watched a Texas game, and then had a good time, and then was hanging with friends yesterday watching all the football. So we were laughing because it was like 7 o'clock, and I turned to my buddy, and I'm like, I don't know if I've ever drank this much between a Wednesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. I don't know. Even when I was really drinking heavy, I was like, I just drank a lot of beers in this time frame. Yeah. And it's weird that it's a Wednesday and a Thursday. So this is an open gym, open bar Friday. I don't have a beer with me right now because I drank so much the last couple of days that I didn't feel the need. But if you're having one, here's to you and cheers. But I did not feel the need to have a beer today. So I'm going to take one off. I'm going to the Spurs game tomorrow night with some friends. So I'm going to drink more tomorrow. So I said, take Friday off. I'm getting too old to just try and put 4 days together like that.
Well, after the Ole Miss game, after New Year's Eve, I decided I'm probably not going to drink for a few days because I had on top of not sleeping at all, I had a wicked hangover. And I went over to my buddy Cliff's house to watch the game. And he offered me a beer when I got there. And I was just like, no, I can't do it. So I sat through that entire game, nerve-wracking moments and all, without a drop of alcohol. Like, I don't know how I was able to do that. I've never done that before. So it was, you know, it just made it that much worse, I guess. Like, that much more nerve-wracking. But, yeah, you know what? They won, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. They got the win. That was very big. But yeah, it was a good couple days hanging out and back here on a Friday. Appreciate you hanging out with us. First things, right now the Liberty Bowl is happening right now. Navy just scored. Matt, I wanted to get your opinion on the helmets. I don't know if you've seen, I think they've worn them before, but the Navy helmets that they are wearing. Here is a picture of one of them. That's one of the pictures of it. Apparently, they're all like hand painted.
Yeah, sometimes there's just too much, you know.
Sometimes like, too much for you.
Yeah, just why not just wear the normal helmet? I mean, that looks like that's terrible.
It just looks like too much. It's too much for me. That's all. I think it'd be cool. Like, that's a cool piece. It doesn't look right on a football field.
Yeah, like I would probably buy that helmet and display it.
Yeah,
but I don't want my entire team wearing it.
No, and that was one of the things at the Citrus Bowl yesterday. Happy New Year, CB. One of the things about the Michigan Texas game was that you got the classic unis, and it was like you didn't have kind of all the stuff. You're like, oh, I like this. I like the classic unis. I like it being clean. So that's just not very clean. And in football, I like it as a decorative, like it's a cool piece, but it's weird seeing 11 guys on the field lined up with it. That's why I think it looks a little weird. And they have them. Like, it's a cool thing to do. It gets a little more press, you know, to each their own. I'm happy that Texas doesn't come out with crazy helmets like that all the time.
Oh yeah. Like that's one of my favorite things about Texas and, you know, these other blue blood schools is they just don't mess with the unis. Like that Texas Michigan uniform matchup is so elite, especially when it's the all white Texas versus the blue and gold Michigan. Yeah. It's one of the best uniform matchups that there is. But that was the first time we have ever seen the burnt orange uniforms versus the white Michigan uniforms. So that was pretty cool. But I mean, hey, Michigan's got to be having nightmares about having to face another Texas quarterback in a couple of years, right?
They're making our quarterbacks look really good. Is that going to be the recruiting pitch now? Or with Dia Bell, you're like, hey, Dia, don't worry, man. Coming up, you're going to get to play Michigan. And
you're going to go for like 400 plus total yards and 5 touchdowns. It's guaranteed.
It's guaranteed, man. Let's get into it a little bit. And I don't think he's going to get a bonus. LSU, because Ole Miss is not giving the bonus. So unless Texas Longhorns on SI is giving you a bonus for Ole Miss winning games, I'm not quite sure that you would get that bonus. But the fact that LSU has got to be like, LSU's like, we kind of said that assuming that they weren't going to win games. we kind of said all that just assuming.
Hey, well, you know what? If I think that he gets 500 grand if they win the semifinal, and I think he gets $1 million if they win the national championship.
Oh, LSU's so mad right now.
Oh, I'm sure. That just makes it that much sweeter, man.
Just like, hey, we're gonna have to take that portal offer back. It turns out we got to shell out another $1 million to Lane Kiffin.
Here's my question to everybody. And everybody in the chat, you can answer this. Patrick, you can answer this as well. Right now, we're guaranteed to get a new national champion in terms of like new head coach winning a national championship for the first time ever.
Yeah.
It's four relative or three relatively likable teams in Miami. I can't get behind Miami being likable. But so my question is, with all the Lane Kiffin stuff and everything that's happened and the way that game went last night, is Ole Miss America's team right now? In this playoff, like, is everybody cheering for Ole Miss, or is it just Ole Miss fans? Like, generally wondering.
I don't know. Because I can tell you, Big Ten, like, there's such a hatred for the SEC that I don't think they're going to be America's. I think people just don't want the SEC to win, and so there's that. But yeah, and by the way, when you say likable teams, Kirk Cignetti is possibly the least likable person on the planet.
He is, but Fernando Mendoza is incredible.
Fernando Mendoza is a likable guy. But yeah, Kirk Cignetti is an extremely unlikable person. So just one of those guys who's like up by 30 points and frowning and being like, this is not fun. This is football. Dude.
Yeah, he's trying way too hard to be Nick Saban, I think. Yes. And it's working so far.
It's working so far.
All four of the coaches, by the way, are Lane Kiffin disciples.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Or Nick
All
Saban's
four of these guys were on Lane Kiffin's staff or at a, on Nick Saban's staff at one point.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Nick Saban has, I mean, he's got a great track record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's been, Cignetti is just, watching that game, and then they're just dominating, and he's still mad. Hey, calm down, man. Calm down. Take it down. And CB, he does, he's probably taking something before a game, like not illegal something, but just something like, you know, there's guys who drink like five Red Bulls or, you know, take whatever, over the counter thing. It just gives you way too much energy.
That guy is ripping lines of Adderall and chugging Monster Energy drinks right before he runs out of the tunnel. I guarantee you it's all legal, but the way he's doing it's probably kind of strange.
Something like that. Yeah, it is. It's interesting. We get into more of it as we get into the playoffs and recap the games and look forward to now what we've got going forward. And once again, the bye weeks were deadly for almost everybody. And that concept going forward, the teams are now going to be like, we don't want the bye. We just want to play football. It's not good to have a bye. It is 1-7 right now. Thank you, Alabama, for not making that 0-8, but you could have made it an easy record, but Alabama didn't want to play football. So, and Indiana's really good, but Alabama did not play very well. But Matt, we did get news so far in the portal. I don't know if anything's happened since we've been on for 15 minutes. It feels like we've gotten a bunch of stuff that happened. We'll start with the coach. Is that we got the report today that Kenyatta Hudson is no longer going to be on the team. So your nickel coach is now taking off. He came in last year as he was an analyst and then moved up to be the nickels coach. He will not be coming back. So I don't know if that means he's planning to go somewhere else, if it didn't work out, or he's getting blamed for something. I thought Grayson Littleton had a really good year. So I don't know exactly why he's not there. This may be a Will Muschamp thing too. Will Muschamp has a different person in mind. If they're going to try and raid anybody from Georgia, that could now happen. Georgia is no longer in the playoffs. So if you want to go steal anybody from Ohio State, you can steal. They're no longer in the playoffs. You can go try and get somebody from there too. So if you're trying to go from one of these staffs that are really, really good, you can do those. But so we saw Kenyatta Hudson going. Is this, do you think we're still probably a few more moves away from being done with this coaching staff? Some of the smaller level guys, maybe we still don't know about Chris Jackson. It does feel like there's massive shakeups coming up on this offense just overall. So, I mean, I could see that. It seems like they would have already done it before the portal, but I mean, it feels like there could probably still be a move or two that happens.
Well, Chris Jackson signed a 2-year extension yesterday. I believe it was yesterday or the day before. Okay. I think on New Year's Eve. The Kenyatta Hudson thing, I think that Will Muschamp's probably just trying to bring in his own guys.
Yeah.
And maybe that means that Will Muschamp is going to coach a position in the secondary alongside being defensive coordinator. I know he's fixing to bring in a safeties coach here real soon. Or maybe the nickels room kind of, since it's going to be, the position is going to be played a little bit differently under Will Muschamp, perhaps it's just going to fold into Mark Orfey's room and he's going to coach both positions. But, you know, it. I wouldn't read too much into it in terms of big staff shakeups. I just think that anytime you bring in a new defensive coordinator, he's probably going to want to have his own guys that he trusts and that he likes. And given the name that I heard for safeties coach, it sounds like that's one of the things that's going to happen very, very soon. And maybe they're just trying to streamline things a little bit. But he's a good coach, and he's going to land somewhere, and he's going to be really good and have a great career as a coach. I have no doubt about that. I don't think there was any ill feelings or anything like that towards him. I think that they're just shaking things up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds about right. It didn't sound too crazy, and they let him coach through the bowl game as well. So he let him go through there, and so it didn't sound that bad there. Then we get to see a couple more big names. There was a couple smaller names in the portal as well, some guys that are younger that have decided to move on. Colin Page, Caleb Chester, a couple names that we've seen jump in the portal. But two bigger names that are no longer going to be with Texas. We saw today Jack Indries has decided after the bowl game he will be declaring for the NFL draft. So you are now replacing your tight end as well. They do have a pretty, they had the most stacked tight end room they've had in years this season. So it's not the end of the world. You're probably still trying to bring in somebody else if there's somebody else you want to get out there. But you do have some young guys you feel pretty good about at playing the tight end. So you're not stuck if you can't get a top level tight end in the portal. But that one was definitely a big one. And then Parker Livingstone also is going to be transferring out. There's different reports and people are saying different things about it. It does feel like they're really going into a shakeup in that wide receiver room, really actively trying to get some people in there from the portal and change things up. They were not happy with how the team did in the wide receiver room. And the possibility for Livingston's catches next season may have been going down. And so if he wants to go play and he does not, you know, he worked his way up into a starting role this year. And if he's getting told, you know, we're actively trying to find people that are better than you, it may be a reason for him to move on. But definitely a big piece that, you know, this, it makes this portal window even more important now because two more starters are now gone from this Texas team.
Yeah, I think that they already have a replacement in mind for the tight end position. This is a staff that I think took every potential outcome into consideration. And after Endries made his choice, they probably have begun moving very quickly to secure his replacement. And I would assume that that name is going to come out very soon. And in terms of Parker Livingstone, I was asked this by multiple people, and there are different takes on what happened, but I think that when you sort of read between the lines and read the tea leaves, I think that he was going to fall down the depth chart.
Yeah.
Not because he's not a good player and not because they don't like him, but because they are going to take a major swing for a star wide receiver, which I believe everybody already knows who that is. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more here in a minute. And I also think that they're trying to pave the way for these younger guys like Kalik Lockett and Jamie French and Jermaine Bishop coming in to really get some serious run next year, as opposed to just being depth on the depth chart. I think that they're going to have their new star receiver. I think they're going to have Ryan Wingo. I think they're going to move Emmett Mosley to slot. And I think that they're probably going to play Kalik Lockett and Jamie French a whole hell of a lot, and Dalen McCutcheon. Six of those guys, I think, are going to play a lot of football next year. So in that scenario, I think that kind of, it just turns Parker Livingstone into a business decision. I don't think he wanted to leave. And I don't think Texas necessarily wanted him to leave either, but at the number that they would have probably had to pay him to get him to stick around, they're like, all right, well, go find a better opportunity for yourself. And I think that he's going to end up landing somewhere really, really good. I think reports out there that he's going to be visiting Indiana this weekend. So that would be a great landing spot for him.
Yeah, no, that'd be a really good landing spot. So yeah, it's, you know, there's some of these guys like DeAndre Moore and Parker Livingstone, you feel like they wanted to be Longhorns, and this is just a tough decision year for Sark. But it further goes into, like, he really, this is a, 2 years ago, we probably should have been closer to a national championship. All right, so last year. And then this season, we should have been, we very underperformed. And Sark seems to be going full in on, we cannot regress. We have to move back and be in, improve better than we've been 2 years ago, in the last year. We have to be a better team than that. And so we've got to go all in to try and go get these guys. And you're just hoping that you don't shoot yourself in the foot doing it, because that's one of those things now where in years past, you go in the recruiting and you would go, we're going all out in recruiting to try and bring in some good young players. But it didn't mean you were always having to let go and make those business decisions of letting go all these other guys. But when you're talking about, we saw seven starters missing for Texas in the defense in the bowl game. Now you're saying you're losing DJ Campbell because of age and eligibility. Jack Henry's now gone. Parker Livingstone, DeAndre Moore, all of your running backs are all. So, you've got to go hit on some of these guys. And we did hear the Cam Coleman news is that they have secured a visit from him tonight and tomorrow. That is definitely going to be one that they're really, really going to try and close before he leaves, because afterwards he's going to A&M, and then he's going to Alabama. And I hear he's also talking to USC. So, you know, if you let him walk off and go those other places, they're not going to try and let him walk off campus. And so that's, I mean, if we don't hear anything, I won't say it's 0% if we don't hear anything by the end of the weekend, but the odds are probably not as high.
Yeah. That's the thing with transfer portal recruiting as opposed to high school recruiting is typically when you have a visit with a guy, you don't want him to leave campus without signing on the dotted line or committing or whatever the case may be. And I think they're going to throw, you know, they're going to break the bank for Cam Coleman. And I don't think that's the only player they're going to break the bank for either, but he gives you exactly what you need in a wide receiver and a true X wide receiver. He pairs incredibly well with Emmett Moseley in the slot and Ryan Wingo on the other side. And he gives you the star power downfield that you really need in this offense for it to be truly successful. A lot like AD Mitchell was for this football team. Very similar type players, except Cam Coleman is more talented, which is saying something. So that's going to be very telling. It could get very expensive. I've heard some people throw out the $4 million mark, and I just would like to say that the person that threw out the $4 million mark was also the person that threw out the $40 million mark. So we'll see how true that ends up really being. But at the end of the day, I don't think Texas particularly cares. If they're not going to sit there and let Texas A&M pay $4 million for him, I can probably promise you that. They're going all in to win a national championship, and that is just one of the many pieces that they're going to take in order to get to that point.
Yeah. No, and it's these numbers are always, I mean, it's you have to believe half of what you read, because we've heard, you know, and like, because the sources some of these guys are getting them from are from boosters and donors and things that don't really know. They're not talking to the agents. They're not doing it. They're getting it secondhand as well. And then it's all getting reported as fact, as opposed to what it is, which is rumors, hearsay, all of that. So you can't necessarily take everything as this is factual. Cam Coleman's agent called me and told me he wants $4 million. Hmm. Yeah, that's when you have to see it. Because we've seen that with basketball players, too. They'll be like, that guy wants $4 million. I mean, hell, we heard it with Nico Iamaliava, and how much did he get?
I don't know. Like $1.5 million, $2 million, something like that.
So we heard his was $8 million, I think, is what he wanted. Yeah. So you hear these things, and they don't necessarily mean, yeah, I like $50 million. I don't think that Texas Sports Unfiltered is coming up with it, though. So it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. Another name I saw that is now getting a crystal ball projection to Texas is running back Isaac Brown from Louisville. He is being projected to come to Texas. He is an exciting guy to look at for what he did. If you watch his highlights and go check out some of the stuff he did, if you just look at what his game log is, I mean, what stands out is, you know, the Miami game, 15 carries for 113 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his longest run in that game was 28 yards. So it wasn't a 70-yarder that kind of skews the numbers on there. Is that he's a guy that has really good balance, falls forward, can break tackles, has really good speed as well. He's a little smaller. He's 5'9", 190, so he's not necessarily a huge guy, but he is part of, if you're replacing Trey Wisner, you're replacing Trey Wisner with Isaac Brown, and you want to replace C.J. Baxter with a power back. You do want to still have the two-back system, at least. You still have Christian Clark, who played well. We'll get into the Citrus Bowl here in a minute. But, you know, there's some young exciting guys on Texas' team already as well. But this was the one that if it becomes official, Isaac Brown does seem like an interesting piece for Texas, and it's good to see somebody already being projected on a Friday. So at least we get something.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of two running backs I think that they're going to try really hard to get. He's incredibly explosive. He's incredibly sudden. He's got top end home run speed. I mean, you watch this guy's highlight tape, like you mentioned, he stops on a dime and can change directions. Like,
yeah,
nobody on this roster currently can. He's an unbelievably productive player. I think he has had some injury issues in the past, nothing serious, but like kind of nagging stuff. I mean, he's a smaller guy, and if he takes a bigger hit, it's going to be harder for him to get up than it would be for, you know, some other guys. But he would be a great start to this. But I know the first question that everybody is going to ask is that if you get Isaac Brown, does that mean Jaden Baugh is a no-go? And I don't believe that to be the case.
Has Ball even entered the portal yet?
He has not entered the portal yet. And I think Florida is trying really hard to keep him.
Yeah.
But if he does enter the portal, even if Texas has Isaac Brown locked down, I would imagine that they are going to go very hard after him as well. And which would ostensibly give Texas the best 1-2 running back punch in the country.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think they're going to try and go because they want a power back. You know, again, this is a team that consistently has had red zone problems. And not been able to run the ball in short yardage. And part of that's offensive line, but part of that was just not having that back who is really good at it. And so that was kind of what CJ Baxter was supposed to be, the 1-2 punch this year. So you're trying to add that back in. You need as many weapons as you can. You mentioned it too. There's always injury history with a lot of these guys now. So you want to be able to be secure that you're not, you know, if you look at his season, this season, he had a few games where he just didn't play as much. Was a little hampered in the middle, and then came out with four straight 100-yard rushing games to end the season. So we can see he's still playing well. It doesn't seem like there's lingering effects of any injury, but it is, all right, is he going to get nicked up? And then we're playing a big game, and he's just nicked up. It's the SEC. You know, you get nicked up, and then you're stuck without having a real running game for a few games. You don't want that. So you want to be able to have at least two guys you feel really confident in. I think they're still – whether Jaden Baugh gets in and they go after him or another name, I think they will still be going for another running back because you lost so many. I mean, you lost a bunch of running backs, so you might as well go ahead and try and get someone else in there.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be focusing on guys who have 1 year of eligibility left, more than likely, or will be going to the NFL after 1 year. So, because I don't think they want to, you know, step too much on the toes of Derek Cooper, who's projecting to be the, you know, the future running back star of this football team once he, you know, gets into the starting lineup. So it would be a hell of a 1-2 punch. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
That it doesn't get much better than that.
No. And I think again, if you're looking at like what Indiana's doing right now, you look at how old that Indiana roster is and how much experience that Indiana roster has. So you do also want to have more experience on your roster because the more games played at this point, the better odds you have for your team being able to consistently provide you what you want. Because now you have a better, you're able to scout them better. You know where, you know, like you're picking guys that you feel can be really good competitors and they just grow and get better. So it does feel like experience is something that was missing this year for Texas. We knew it was going to be a young team. And it would surprise me if Sark doesn't try and address that a little bit more too. Of all right, in the transfer portal, we don't need to try and be so young. The idea is, man, wouldn't it be great to not have to do this every year? Wouldn't it be great to have some consistency? And the reality is that ship may have sailed for the time being. So you kind of got to keep going back out there and go get people. And so we'll keep seeing more names pop up. It is. I did think we were going to see more like immediate stuff, but teams are playing a little bit closer to the vest. They're not trying to be as blatantly obvious for tampering. So, you know, you have to wait for the names to get in the portal. So everybody started putting their stuff in either last night at midnight or they started doing it in the morning, which I think a lot of people did it this morning because you would see that there was like 32 people in, I think, in the morning. And then by noon, there was like 500 people in there. So it's the database grows and they're putting more and more people into the portal. Now you have to do that. Then you're, you know, that's how you can actually contact them. And that's how you can have the actual conversation as a coach with these players, because before that, you can't really even talk to them to make sure that you're not getting somebody that you don't want on your team. You've done all your due diligence and everything else, but at the end of the day, it does leave you trying to figure it out. But yeah, is there any been other big names you've heard, Matt, of interest? I know there's a defensive lineman too. I didn't write down his name. That they've got coming to campus.
There's actually three other guys that they have. Two of them are there right now or are getting there today. One of them has a visit scheduled for next week. We'll see if that one ends up happening or not. But Ian Giffrard, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's like 6'7", 389-pound defensive tackle. The ideal nose tackle for a Will Muschamp defensive system. Big space eater, very hard to move, you know, clogs up those rushing lanes and allows linebackers to run free into the gaps and in their run fits and stuff. He is there. I think he's either getting there today or he's there right now. Jaden Woods, a freshman edge rusher from Florida, he entered the portal. He's going to have 3 years of eligibility left. He's just a young guy that they feel really good about developing, that's really talented. And he's either on campus or he's getting there very soon. And that is a guy that I would not expect to leave Austin without being locked up. I think you can feel pretty good about that one if you're a Longhorns fan. Really, really good player. And then Robert Woodyard, the linebacker from Auburn, also supposedly has a visit set for next week. They were trying to nail down the day. Again, ideal linebacker for a Will Muschamp system. He's big, he's physical, he's violent, he's fast, he's really good against the run. And in the Will Muschamp system, he's, you know, middle linebackers aren't going to be asked to do as much in pass coverage. And that's kind of where he struggles a little bit. So, you know, it would be a really great fit with him. I think Miami is also trending with him though. So that one might be a little bit more of a situation where Texas has to find a couple of other guys, but I do think they have a couple of other guys in mind there. And then also, apparently Wardell Mack is reconsidering his options and is likely going to be back next year. There was some reports that he was planning on entering the portal. It appears those have been reversed to a certain degree, and they believe that he will be back now. And I have also heard rumors that Derek Williams could be coming back as well and not end up leaving in the portal. So that would be two really big wins right there as well.
Yeah, that'd be good to bring some of those guys back. That'd be very nice. As for James Peoples, Shaddy, I think James Peoples is going to be a good back. I'm not sure if he's somebody that they would add to be a piece for next season, like a big piece, because he wasn't a huge piece for Ohio State this year. He's a decent player, but he wasn't like he underwhelmed at Ohio State this year. They wanted him to do a little bit more. And so I'm not sure when you walk through and you go, you know, we wanted somebody who is, I think they want to bring in somebody who's a 1 year guy, like Matt said. And so you want to bring in somebody, he's a sophomore, for him to run he's a talented player, but I'm not quite sure that in a room with some good young talent, that you would go with that.
I don't think he's one that they're looking at right now. I get that he's from San Antonio and he's a Texas kid. I think that they have their two running backs in mind and they have a third running back in mind. If Baugh doesn't enter the portal, I just don't think Peoples is on that list, at least as of yet. Maybe it could get to that point at some point, but if he wants to be in Texas, there's a couple of other schools who would need a running back where he would be a really good fit. So that's just not the one that I think that they're looking at right now.
Yeah. And that the fact that he's a sophomore, and you kind of look at it and you go, we don't necessarily need him for 3 years, because you feel like you have guys that are really going to be elite behind him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he'd be a really good addition to the running back room, but I'm guessing he wants to go somewhere where he's going to get over 10 carries a game, because he did get at Ohio State. So he will definitely not get guaranteed 10 carries a game at Texas. Mm-hmm. So they would come in, they go, we're going to give you basically the same work share you got at Ohio State, if that.
Yeah. And Chan, I believe that it is still trending that way. Yes. I don't think he's made it official yet, but I believe that is the plan right now, is for him to stick around for another year.
Yeah. So, but yeah, looking around there, some interesting names. We'll keep an eye out for it. This weekend is going to be a lot of action, and yeah, hopefully you get some of these names. that don't make it off campus, that that, you know, they come in and we get a news break tomorrow that Cam Coleman got offered what he wanted and he's happy and he's going to be in the Sark system. He just watched Arch Manning have a dominant performance against Michigan. You know, he may want to go race Arch Manning. We know now that we know Arch Manning is one of the fastest players in football, that he's got that Lamar Jackson speed. This is Arch Manning.
Yeah, 21.7 miles per hour he was clocked at.
Crazy.
On that touchdown run. That's wild.
Yes, it is. It's, yeah, when they were, yeah, just looking at what people have done, and like 22 is really like 22, 22 and a half or something like that is around like the top level of fastest guys in that's wide receivers and stuff. I think Ryan Wingo was at 22 this year.
Well, and here's the other thing too. This was after Arch had been battered and beaten and bleeding from the mouth.
Yeah, no, because we were rewatching some of the game last night between Alabama and the Alabama-Indiana game and the Georgia-Ole Miss game. So we just put it on like the fourth quarter of it to watch, you know, instead of watching Indiana celebrate. we put that on. And yeah, you watch Arch like limping off the field. And you're like, he hasn't done the run yet. Wait a minute. He's limping off now. He hasn't done the run yet. So definitely fun to watch that. But Matt, we did see in the Citrus Bowl. We'll talk about that. The Citrus Bowl happened over the weekend and or happened yet 2 days ago now. Time is completely meaningless over this. I have no idea what day it is. I know it's Friday now. I know it's Friday. Woke up, not sure what day it was. It's been like there. But Texas comes out, Arch Manning puts on what he does best. This is probably the biggest Arch Manning run game that we have seen, the dual threat Arch Manning, where you were more worried about Bryce Underwood being the dual threat. He does carry the ball more. He had some success, 4.9 yards per carry for Bryce Underwood. He was able to make his legs work, but the nine carries for 155 yards for Arch, throwing in also 221 passing yards, two touchdowns. Really got it going for this Texas team. The offense seemed to be clicking. The offensive line played better than they played in a while. Now, part of that was Michigan missing some defensive linemen who are really good pass rushers. But seeing Christian Clark go for 100 yards was very nice. I know Michael Terry only got one carry, so Matt's very upset about that, because I feel like Michael Terry was a name that came up a few times in the pregame.
I thought that he was going to be more involved, but he was not. I was pretty surprised by that. But maybe they were just riding the hot hand, because Christian Clark was unbelievable. He was running with so much more purpose and confidence, I think, than he had been running with early on in the season. And I think that that really showed, and it proves why they were so excited about him heading into the season.
Yeah,
the kinds of things that he's capable of. I mean, he's so quick, and he's very hard to get your hands on. I heard the Bijan Robinson comps to him before the season started, and I don't think that's quite there.
No,
but he's going to be a really good addition to this running back room next year. Like, if they bring in the two guys that we think that they're going to bring in, plus him, plus James Simon, this is going to be a really, really deep, talented room. And he should have a lot of success. I mean, he's kind of an ideal third down back, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw early in that game when he stepped up into the pocket and took on that block that was huge for Arch there early in the game. I mean, if he can do things like that consistently, he's going to find himself some really good playing time next year, regardless of who they bring in.
Yeah. No, I mean, it has to make you happy. You can't judge everything on one game, but him consistently getting yardage, him being able to fall forward. Like, I know it's, but like just being able to power yourself. Cause like when I say fall forward, it seems simple, but it's about being just elusive enough that a guy can't get right in front of you and push you backwards and stuff. You can get around them enough to go get those extra yards for you, to keep your legs pumping, all those pieces. He just did so well finding the holes as well, which was, I think early in the season, he couldn't find the holes. And that's why he kind of played less during the season, was it just felt like he wasn't quite seeing it. In this game, it looked like he saw it and was able to get in the right place, be a little bit more patient, but go in and attack the holes right. So all that stuff gave you a lot of hope for Christian Clark. Makes you feel good in a room that, you know, you did lose Trey Wisner. You lost C.J. Baxter, and then you still had through 235 rushing yards. And I get Arch was a lot of that, but I don't think anybody would have said if Texas is losing all of their running backs, they're going to have 235 rushing yards in this game.
Well, it really shows what Jabbar Jalouk can do, doesn't it? Like, he was only there for a few weeks, but he, I mean, it seemed like Christian Clark was a different running back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, think about what he's going to be able to do with James Simon and Michael Terry and Derek Cooper and, you know, with an entire offseason to mold these guys. It's just going to be that much better. And you got to give credit to the offensive line. They struggled a little bit early.
Yeah.
In pass protection, but their run blocking was very good all night. And that's something that we hadn't seen all year, was consistent blocking in the run game. So that has to make you feel good as well, that when they get some more talent in there along the interior, that there's a good chance that Texas will be okay in that department next year.
Yeah. I mean, we look across in the wide receiver room, a lot of good addition, a lot of, you know, well-played balls. Ryan Wingo still had a couple drums that you didn't want to see, but, you know, overall,
it was a penalty on one of them anyway. They just declined it.
But there was, you know, a few different things that that played well. Kalik Lockett had that big catch, which was good to see Kalik Lockett get the big catch out there. Little upset about Dalen McCutchen as well. That was another guy that, I mean, we said the two guys we were most excited to watch were Michael Terry and Dalen McCutchen. And, it wasn't the most fun watching them because Michael Terry, one carry, got stuffed. And Dalen McCutchen just dropped, two, three balls in this game?
Yeah, he dropped a couple. One of them was one of the most unbelievably placed throws that I've seen in a long time, too. Like, you got to catch that one.
You got to help your quarterback out, man. Yeah. It was a little upsetting to see that from Dalen McCutchen. But overall, you think, okay, for whatever reason, that wasn't his game. We've seen him play all right already this season, so I think you'll be a little bit better with him. Another offseason for him. But yeah, seeing Kalik Lockett get in the game and some of those receivers, Arch Manning spread the ball around enough. You like to see that as well, that you're not just having to stick to the one thing. They did not run the wide receiver screen to start the game. It's kind of upsetting.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe that. They ran a screen to Jack Andrews, but it wasn't the Ryan Wingo play.
It wasn't the Ryan Wingo play.
They need to open every single game with that play next year. Every single game. Just to continue the meme.
And you know, this is a game that was close early, but it was, a lot of that was the Ryan Niblett fumble, which you just hate to see. Niblett's been so good for Texas, you know, that one ends up just being unfortunate. The ball comes out and it kind of turned the tide, but once Texas defense started to pick up, it really changed the game. And of course, three interceptions by Bryce Underwood, you know, going to the fourth quarter and everything, where Texas just started to take control of the game. But that's kind of the biggest story to me, was that this defense woke up in the second half, and where in the first half, I was cutting them some slack, because you are out seven starters. Like, you were really not in the place where you could expect the defense to be elite with so many players going, your defensive coordinator is fired. Like, there's just so much change in so many different places. Even though you get a month to get ready for it, it did seem like a little bit of a you know, there was going to be a little bit of a lapse. But they allowed 10 points in the second half, were able to go run the ball out offensively, get the ball back in their offense's hands, and the defense seemed to really step up. And Colin Simmons is still the dude. That dude is just fun to watch play football.
Yeah, cements himself as the best pass rusher in the SEC, by the way. He ended the season leading the SEC in sacks after that game. You know, Cassius Howell had it. He had a playoff game to expand that lead, and he wasn't able to do anything in that game. Colin Simmons comes in and does a really great job against Michigan. He was so disruptive. I was super impressed with the defense. Like, there was obviously some holes there at different points. Cade Phillips had a really rough series trying to tackle at one point there. Kobe Black went down with an injury, which, you know, put Warren Roberson in the game, and then he actually played really well. Didn't commit a penalty, which I was surprised by. And he had that hit on the Michigan tight end, which I was just like, holy shit. Like, he might have concussed both of them out of the game, but Roberson was able to come back, Wardell Mack stepped up and got a pick. The closing speed on Bo Barnes is insane. That sack that he had of Bryce Underwood, he was shot out of a cannon. And then there was another play by Ty'Anthony Smith, another tackle by Ty'Anthony Smith where he closed just insanely fast. And obviously he had the two picks as well. So there was just guys stepping up in multiple different areas, young players as well, which was really, really good to see. And it gives you a lot of hope for these young guys on the defense next year, man, because there's so much raw talent there. And if Will Muschamp can hone these guys in and really, develop that talent the right way, it could be a really special unit. I think Ty'Anthony Smith is a great fit for the Will Muschamp off-ball linebacker spot. And Bo Barnes is a great fit for the middle linebacker spot. I do think that they're still going to bring in linebackers in the portal, obviously, but I was super impressed by both of those guys when they were on the field. And I thought Brad Spence played well too. And also props to Johnny Nansen. I thought he did a tremendous job. I thought he called that thing so much better than PK would have in a tight game. And again, no disrespect to PK. He did great things at Texas, but that just seemed like a lot more aggressive of a defense than I'd really seen all year long outside of the A&M and Oklahoma games.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, the second half was, again, he really honed it in, and everything seemed to hit its stride there in the second half. They started to figure it out, went in, made the adjustments, and were ready to go. And that's – I also did believe, too, Michigan was not going to play as well in the second half because I had no faith that Biff Poggi was going to come out there and give them the halftime speech that they
needed. Pre-game speech was whack, too. He's just like, I love you guys. Go out there and have fun, and let's see what we can do. and look, that was a really physical game. Both of those teams really wanted that one. And I agree, CB, the refs were awful in that
one. Oh, there was a point in that game where we're watching. I'm like, and I don't care. It's like, you guys get this is supposed to be fun, right? It's a bowl game, man. Like, we can't call everything all the time. And it was just flag after flag. Oh, it was frustrating. They almost
as bad as the refs in the Ole Miss Georgia game.
They called the one face mask on when Bryce Underwood is coming through that was questionable. His hands on the face, but I don't know if he grabs it. And then they don't call one that's really obvious on the other side. And I'm like, and then you see the flag coming. I'm like, I'm fine with you calling it. So I'm fine with you protecting players in a bowl game. Completely fine with you protecting players in a bowl game. But there's a line in that. And they did not find it, and they just got too flag happy in the Texas game. It was rough. And it was rough in the Georgia Ole Miss game as well. But Georgia's done that all year. Kirby Smart works the refs better than probably anybody, and he got a timeout for free. That's how well Kirby Smart works the refs. And I don't know why they haven't figured this out yet, that Kirby Smart is a liar to refs. He will lie to your face with a straight face. And I think a lot of coaches will, but I was clapping. We'll go down an infamy of just like, how are you not like, how does no one mad about this? How did that just happen and go away?
Yeah. He's a absolute snake oil salesman. Like he lies to your face, and I don't understand how he gets away with it. I almost lost it at those refs last night, man. I really did. I was so close to just picking. I had my laptop over at my buddy's house just in case transfer portal news started to drop. I almost picked up my laptop and threw it right at his TV. Like that face mask was so egregious.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff that happened at the end of the game, like, give me a break. I've never been more sure that the referees were on the take or like had gambling implications in this game in some way, shape, or form. Like it was bad.
No, and it's always those games with like teams like Georgia where you're like, Kirby Smart has talked to these refs and told them, guys, you're smart guys. You know how much better we are than Ole Miss. So if we're losing, it's because they're cheating. you're like, dude, you can't do that. But you just know he works those refs. And I'm just, because they get calls all the time. And it's just always been that way that they're able to get away with stuff. He's a hell of a coach. I'm not trying to be down on him on that sense, but yeah, it does feel that they get a lot of those calls, and don't get calls on them because they're Georgia. So they got to be good enough to not have those calls. And it's crazy.
Well, I first of all, what they said on the broadcast last night is absolutely true. If Kirby Smart never wins another football game for the rest of his career, he's going to be in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He is that good. But hey, this is just me playing devil's advocate a little bit, but I think it is a conversation that we need to have. Does Ole Miss own Georgia? Because we beat them last year.
Yeah.
28-10 or something like that. We gave away the game in Athens this year. We should have won that game if we had been able to put together a drive and get one stop in that fourth quarter. That game would have been Ole Miss's. And then we really outplayed them for the majority of the football game last night too. Just the drops and the fumble kind of kept Georgia in it, and then we dominated them in the second half. So I think it's a conversation. I'm just saying.
I think the problem is, I think Charlie Weiss Jr. has a good beat on Kirby Smart, and Golding has a good beat on Bobo.
Well, yeah, but that's part of it. But so it probably won't be the same next year. But I'm just saying, now it kind of seems like Ole Miss is George's daddy.
Did they lose to him this year, though?
But we gave that one away.
Oh, you gave. Okay. I got you. I got you. Hey, look, you won the important one. You won the important one. It does. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. I want to get more into an hour or two. We'll talk more about the rest of the playoffs and go more into that Ole Miss and Georgia game as well. But wrapping up, talking about Texas in this game, was there anybody in this game, Matt, that really offensively we were super excited about? That for Texas that you're like, oh God, that guy's, I mean, clearly Christian Clark, but like, is there another player that maybe stood out that you were happy with? I mean, I think offensive line wise, you still had to love Trevor Goosby. You still had to love some of those offensive line players. Maybe not Connor Robertson snapping the ball to nobody, but.
Hey, he did make a great snap on that fourth down.
The little trick. I love that. That was a great play.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. And that's got to, I mean, I'd have to ask my brother because he used a deep snap when he was in high school, but that's got to be a lot harder to do than it looks, like snapping it through two guys' legs.
Yeah.
Into the right spot. Offensively, I mean, obviously Arch Manning is going to be the top of everybody's conversation. Cemented himself as the Heisman Trophy front runner for next year, probably, despite what everybody else, you know, or how much everybody hates to see that. It's probably true.
But Paul Feinbaum is back on board.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. it's just going to be the same thing we saw last summer, except now he's going to be able to handle it a lot better, I think. But I think that the one guy that I was pleasantly surprised by was Kalik Lockett. He came in the second half after Emmett Moseley went down, and he made – a really, really, really tough catch in a big moment that not a lot of true freshman wide receivers can make when they haven't been playing all year. Like, it's one thing if it's Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams and they've been playing a whole season and they just continue to wow you. But if you've gotten zero playing time all year and then it's a really tight game in a very meaningful game to everybody that was playing on the field, I think both teams really wanted to win it. To catch that ball contested and be able to high point it and hold on to it and get your feet down to take the lead in that moment, I think was really impressive. I think he's going to be really, really, really good one of these days. Really, really good.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. All right, let me ask you someone on the text line. Johnny Longhorn in the text line said it too, and CB said it here. Matt, your opinion, should that have been Texas ball touchback when Bryce Underwood went in the end zone and it was – almost maybe a fumble, maybe not touchdown. That's where do you lean on that one? I'll go where I know what I believe in it, but
I mean, if it was called on the field that it was a fumble into the end zone, I think it would have stood. That's how close it was, in my opinion. But without, you know, that being taken into account, I think it was a fumble. I think he started losing it just before he crossed the goal line, and that should have been a touchback. And I also don't think that the catch that the guy made in the corner of the end zone on the first touchdown they had was a touchdown either.
Yeah, I would say out of both of those, I'm fine with him having one touchdown. It was, but you're like, but two of them in a row, and they were just like, come on, guys, you can't. He's part of all of this, that everything is, no, his toe touches the millisecond before it is, but that, yeah, I basically, that was one, you were like, if they called it a touchdown on the field, it's staying a touchdown. It's not, it wasn't blatant enough in the way they've called it all year long. This is every time I hang out with friends and there's a catch fumble thing, and it's like, and I go, what do they call in the field? And they're like, that, they're like, that's what it's going to be. Because they're like, there is no real rule for catches anymore. It's all kind of made up in whatever they want it to be. And that's the same thing of going to the end zone, which, by the way, also one of the dumbest rules in football, a rule that is way too over penalizing and should be gone, is that if you fumble up through the end zone, it's a touchback in the other team's ball. I don't like that rule. It's such a weird rule that if you fumble out at the 1 yard line, it's your ball on the 1 yard line. And if you fumble 1 yard further up, it's a turnover in the other way. And they're both just a ball rolling out of bounds. So I dislike how much more of a penalty that is for you in that. So I just don't like that rule already. I think it should be something where they're like, all right, you get it the 5 or the 10 or whatever, and you get the ball back. But yeah, I think you should keep the ball. And so it's just silly, but yeah, that one, I get why, I 100% understand why people are upset, because if you're looking at it as a Longhorn way, it's definitely a fumble. Trying to be impartial about it, I'm like, it's a bowl game. I'd probably let him have one of those, but if I had already called the other one a touchdown, I'm not calling both a touchdown.
How many points did Michigan score? 27?
27 and 14. And now they could have scored. Now that the fumble would have been turned the ball over. The other one, they still could have scored.
Wasn't that on third down, though?
It could have been. I have to go back and look.
I want to say that one was on third down. I could be wrong. Either way, to give up 27 points and two of those plays are that controversial,
yes,
and both result in touchdowns, I think is really impressive. I'm fine with the touchback rule. Like, if you fumble it out of the back of the end zone, I don't think you should be able to keep it. It's just like, you know, it's... It's complicated because there's certain plays where it's like, okay, like that should, like, you shouldn't give the ball to the other team on that one. Like if a guy drops the ball as he's going into the end zone.
Yes.
And it ends up being a touchback or whatever, and the other team gets the ball. Like that's one thing. But if you're like going for the end zone and you like throw it out of the back of the end zone and you're getting contact, I don't know. It's,
yeah, because always the thought is, like, again, is if you go in and someone makes a last-second diving fumble on you at the 45-yard line, the ball goes out of bounds, it's your ball. Like, it just doesn't – it seems weird that just because it's in the end zone, it's not still your ball if the other team doesn't recover it. Like, I don't – that's the only thing is, I think if the other team recovers it, sure, but, you know, that's part of the fumbles. You have to recover it or it stays with the team.
Well, yeah, but if you get sacked in the end zone, it's a safety. And if you get sacked at the 50-yard line, you keep the ball.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think that, I don't know. I always thought it's too damning of a play because it is a wild swing for something of, like, and there's been questionable ones. Like, this one would have been a very questionable, like, Michigan people would have been livid had it gone the other way, which I get. Yeah. So they have the right. The same way we were could be livid that we thought it was another touchdown. I think both of them are valid takes because it is such a, you know, minute difference of when does he lose control and where is the ball actually. But look, if we're going by Vanderbilt refs, he was in by like 2 feet when he scored. If we remember the 2-point conversion, that was good. So he may have been in by you know, 2 or 3 feet if we're talking about Vanderbilt refs. That play still is mind-boggling of how bad that call was. So we're just talking about bad plays. And Woodcrest, I think there was reasons why Lockett wasn't playing as much earlier, and the same reason why Christian Clark, he looked better in these games, but that does not mean he would have been ready 6 weeks ago to go up there. So I'm excited for Clay Lockett next year, for sure.
I think that just kind of proves that the 15 bowl practices that they had
very important
were extremely important. Because it got both of those guys ready to go, and they were preparing as, you know, big contributors for this football game, and they were ready to go in big moments. Here's the other really interesting stat about this game, and I tweeted this. everybody remembers Vince Young having an unbelievable game against Michigan in 2005. Like, that was the Vince Young coming out party and what put him on top of the Heisman ballots, you know, at the start of the following season and all of that stuff. Arch Manning outgained him by 100 yards in this one.
Crazy.
That's insane. That's one of the best, like, people talk about that Vince Young performances as one of the best Rose Bowl performances of all time. And Arch outgained him by 104 yards.
That 60-yard run, man. That 60-yard yeah. run. Just watching your quarterback pull away from DBs.
Oh, it's so awesome.
Like, hey, that's what I was talking to some friends about it, and they're like, why, you know, guys, like, why are they radaring them? And I'm like, because teams want to know their game speed, because you can run a 40 in street clothes. It's not quite the same thing as what can you do in the fourth quarter when you've been beat up all game and you're carrying a football and wearing full pads. How fast can you actually go there? And you go, oh, really, really fast. There you go, CB. They both had those 60-yard runs. Hey, I bet Vince did it with less steps, though.
He probably did it with less steps.
Thank God.
But both Arch Manning and Vince Young have their coming out parties against Michigan.
Yeah.
The following season, they both play Ohio State. I'm just saying, it sets up really nicely.
Let's do it. I love it. All right, man. Let's take our first break here. We'll come back. We'll get into the playoffs. We've got to make some NFL picks as well. We both went 2-2 in our picks so far over the game. So we got a couple more picks to throw in there. We're going to pick the two games that still matter, the division games that still matter. Games are in the line. Things are on the line, man. We'll talk some more about what's on the line in the NFL. Texas basketball plays their first SEC opener, first SEC game tomorrow. So lots to get into in hour two. And of course, keep talking to you. Keep it up. Both Matt and I are trying to do a show and keep an eye out for any news that could be dropping as we continue on in this show, because you want to be able to be abreast of what we're doing. So we're going to keep that going with you as we continue on here on Open Gym here on Texas Sports Unfiltered.
At Sleep Cycle Center, we can treat your sleep apnea in various ways. My story starts 15 years ago with the loss of my father to undiagnosed, untreated sleep apnea. And this is a very preventable disease, and treatment options are various. Millions of people across America have sleep apnea, and they fail to realize the early warning signs. Fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and snoring are the most common signs. We'll find the best solution using advanced technology, oral and epigenetic appliances, or CPAP. We offer weight loss, oral surgery, and laser treatments. Schedule your appointment today and get your sleep evaluation.
If you're looking to remodel a kitchen, renovate your bathroom, or maybe add some new life to your outdoor space, reach out to our friends at McCall Custom Homes. They are custom home builders and renovators here in Central Texas, and they've been doing it in Central Texas for more than 40 years. It's a father-son team with a ton of experience, and all of that experience is here in the Austin area. So they know what it takes to turn an Austin area home into something truly, truly special. Right now, our friends at McCall Custom Homes are offering free estimates to TSU listeners so they can come out to your place, hear your vision, they can tell you what they can do, and then you can go from there. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their website, McCallCustomHomesATX.com. Look at the gallery of jobs they've done over the last four decades. And then when you're ready, again, reach out to them and they will come to you. McCallCustomHomesATX.com, or you can call or text Mike McCall directly at 512-633-9580. It's McCall Custom Homes. We build value into your home.
Hi, this is Tom McKay, owner of Audiovisual Consultations, and all of us at Audiovisual would like to wish you and your family a happy holiday season. This time of year can get a little hectic, so we want to remind you to relax, enjoy the season with your family and friends, and give us a call at 512-255-8678 for all of your home entertainment needs. This is my favorite time of the year. I love the holidays, the music, the decorations, the presents, the whole darn thing. So this year I'm asking all you listeners to help make this a special holiday for everyone. Smiles are contagious and free, so let's give them away like the government gives away
away your money. Let's high-five strangers on the street. Hold the door for people behind us. Tip your servers more than they've ever been tipped before. Give to a charity, or hell, give to a bunch of charity. If someone does a good job, tell them they did a good job. Pat someone on the butt. Sing in public places just because it feels good. And as always, hug your kids until they beg you to stop. Watch some games with your friends and make love to your wife or your husband. I know there's some women listening too. You can still give us a call at 512-255-8678 if you'd like to get some cool electronics. But more importantly, have a great holiday season and a fucking awesome next year.